Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
I'm begging, begging you to put your loving hand out, baby.
You know, I was we have all the radio stations on here at Odyssey St. Louis. How many do we have now, Sue? Like a dozen,
five,
15,
four,
25? I don't know how
25,
many we have.
25, that's it.
We have quite a few, but I heard one of our sister stations, Y98, playing this song.
Oh, did
I heard
you really?
Hayes playing it because they. I was walking through the building and heard Måneskin. Yeah, they were playing this. You know,
wow.
We discovered this, you might remember, on this talk radio station over
oh, yeah?
the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had heard about it because one of my friends out west said, well, they're playing it on Kiss in Los Angeles.
Oh, well, and, there you go.
Well, but that was, you know, that is a radio station that sort of leads the way.
Exactly.
And, you know, they. A station in the Midwest might pick it, this might change now, but let's face it. Back, if you go 20 years ago, Kiss would play something, and then maybe 6 months later, it would finally get picked up in the Midwest.
We're
that
not
might
fast,
be a slight organ,
but
you know, slightly exaggerated. But I still think that story, that band, is fascinating because that song is 4 years old, and then all of a sudden, I can't remember the specifics of how it got popular.
Is it like
Dave,
a TikTok thing,
TV show or a TikTok thing?
Oh,
right.
Probably TikTok.
Of course.
And it went to number one internationally. And then I was watching, we watched The Voice still. Alexa likes to watch The Voice. And I think they're wrapping up this season tonight and tomorrow or soon. But we were watching one of the episodes from last week and they were on. I mean, they are.
Wow. Are they young? Are they old? Yeah.
Oh, they're young, glam rock. Glam. I mean, and they wear some wild stuff. The guy that was on. Their lead singer, when he was on The Voice, was barely wearing anything. It was very strange, but
in a good way.
Not in a good way.
Yeah,
not in a good way too.
Yes.
But I do like that song. So, Måneskin. I didn't know how to pronounce the name for so
I've
long.
I've been saying Måneskin.
Right. So have I. But
I heard
then
it's Allie's ship.
Well, I told you they warmed up for the Stones in Vegas, so that's kind of how I knew the pronunciation. Terry Jones from Issue and Insights coming up a little later this hour. They wrote a great editorial. Man, I'm having trouble with just phlegm this afternoon. Mm. Sorry about that. Terry and the board at the at Issues and Insights wrote a great piece about the climate change situation with the models and all the modeling and the predictions that have not held up. The stats on this that won't be reported in other newspapers, I think, are actually hilarious. And we'll get to that a little later this hour. Plus, an audio cut of the day sponsored by The Sound Room. I read a piece. Fred has been working on tracking this guy down for a little while now.
Because, how about Fred Botnar
thank you, Kenny.
Over there, ladies and gentlemen?
He's coming in with his folders right now.
I found this piece that was after, right around the Rittenhouse trial, around Thanksgiving, by David Ben Moshe, who was described as a writer, speaker, fitness coach, but he lives in Israel, and that's where he is, joining us this afternoon. He is African-American and ex-felon, and wrote that he's glad Kyle Rittenhouse is free. We're going to explore that this afternoon with David. David Ben Moshe, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So do you actually, just as a point of clarification, you live in Israel currently?
Yep, I live in Be'er Sheva, Israel.
Can I ask a COVID question? How's COVID over there right now?
So right now, everyone's kind of freaking out about the Omicron variant, but we're still highly vaccinated. Like, a lot of things are still going on. They just closed down the country to foreigners entering, which is kind of frustrating for people trying to visit. But overall, doing pretty well.
That's good to hear. We're freaking out here, as you might imagine, too, about Omicron. Everyone's freaking out. So that seems to be universal. Maybe just kind of explain your story a little bit. One of the things that I think you're doing is you're writing a book about your journey from federal prison to where you're living right now. But maybe a little background on how you ended up in federal prison, and then we'll get into the Rittenhouse stuff and your perspective, which I think is necessary and unique.
So I grew up in rural Maryland. To two parents who are from New York City decided they wanted to get away from the city as far as they could. And they're both fundamentalist Christians. And I was just raised in like that fundamentalist Christian rural world. And that really never like connected with me for a variety of reasons. And then as I got older, didn't have to do the things my parents said, eventually fell out of it, went to college. My first time in college had a terrible experience. A big part of it was I probably wasn't mature enough, but also struggled with some learning disabilities and ended up dropping out of college pretty quick. And I needed to find a way to support myself because I'd just fallen out with my parents, didn't finish college. And one of the things that was very easy was I realized when I was at college that people would just ask to buy drugs from me because when you're black on a college campus, that happens. And if I went to other parts of the city, people would see me and just offer to sell me drugs. So I just put two and two together and started making a living that way, which eventually got me in federal prison.
What was the charge?
So I was convicted of unlicensed dealing of firearms and distribution of oxycodone.
So you have, you know, as you mentioned in the piece, you have a perspective that is, you know, unique in the sense that not everyone has been to federal prison, and you related in a certain way to what happened with Kyle Rittenhouse. But I want you to explain your perspective here, because I think there were a lot of frustrations in the aftermath of this trial. I certainly expressed a lot just because of the media coverage. But there were things that you saw in this whole story, not just the trial, and I think a lot of us saw this, that weren't accurate from perhaps both sides of the equation, right?
Yes. I take one of the things from my perspective is that both sides did such a terrible job of presenting the facts. They barely clearly looked like they had a certain story that they wanted to tell, and they told that story despite the fact that clearly the truth is in the middle, and there's really a lot of very valuable things that we can learn from this case on both sides. And I think some important policy changes and laws that I think most reasonable people could get behind. And it was just lost in the noise of the two competing narratives and people arguing about who's right.
Yeah, so you had, you know, some folks on the right seeing him, as you wrote, as a hero being dragged through an unjust court system. I never thought that he was a hero, but I certainly thought that it was an unjust, you know, charge, if you will, and certainly the victim of media demonization. But you said the left saw a white supremacist who drove across state lines to kill peaceful protesters demanding dignity for black Americans, which I think is what they saw. But both those assumptions, as you point out, David, were wrong, right?
Yeah. I believe both of those assumptions were completely wrong. I think what happened was there was a terrible situation that was caused by multiple systemic failures that we need to address. And that ended up with this 17-year-old kid in a position where he was trying to do something for his community, and he was attacked and defended himself. And then because of multiple breakdowns in the aftermath, it wasn't dealt with in a good way at all, which made the narrative, gave fuel for the other side of the narrative to talk about the injustices on the other side.
But you felt, in again, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, you felt like the system worked in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, that certainly the evidence did not stack up, that he should have been found not guilty. But David, I think your broader point here is that we are having the wrong discussions in this country, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you're correct in that I think as far as the court case, I think the court case went through, the right verdict was reached, very clear from the evidence, but it distracts from the big thing we should be talking about, and that is the things that need to change and that we can learn from both his case, and I very much connect it to the Jacob Blake shooting, which is another great example of things we could learn to make America a better and safer place for everybody.
So what are those things that you think we need to learn? And one of the challenges, I think, with all of these things, we may be able to come to some agreement here on what we might need to learn. But, man, it is tough to do. And here I am, a media guy, but it's tough to do in this current media climate, because I think that the mainstream media has a lot of blame here with some of these cases.
Yep, I think on both sides of the aisle that mainstream media has a lot of blame and is kind of fueling that, stoking, that might be a better word, that fire
right.
for ratings and clicks, and it's destroying our country.
So your argument is, and I think you're right, sometimes this happens, and I'm a talk show host and conservative talk show host, so I know what some of this is when it comes to winning. You said we seem to care more about our side winning than we do about creating a better future. It's interesting because I think a lot of people, you know, you pigeonhole both sides, sometimes we do, into what they might believe on even this case, the Rittenhouse case. But I knew a lot of people that really did not consider him, both on the left and right, did not consider him a hero, but they did feel like he should not have gone to prison for the rest of his life or been deemed a criminal for this. But what would be, in your mind, David, what would be the things that we could focus on more to think, you know, maybe to have more productive either policies or anything along those lines that would improve the situation with the justice system?
So going to this specific case, let's start with Jacob Blake, because that's really where this story starts in my eyes. Where when you watch the Jacob Blake video, what I see is a absolutely egregious failure in police training. Having been someone who's worked with the police department on training protocols, I'm familiar with just how badly the police are trained. And the fact that they could get into a physical fight with him, tase him, and then he could walk away from them while ignoring instructions without being restrained to reach for a deadly weapon and force the officer to freak out at the last second and shoot him seven times should not happen.
Yeah.
Like, there's multiple stops where, like, if the police officers were better trained in how to physically restrain people, if the non-lethal means functioned better, like, just so if he had, even once it got to that point, like, one shot to a different area sooner before it's the last possible second, like, so many off ramps that could have resulted in a better outcome.
I don't necessarily maybe disagree with that. I often defer to law enforcement. I don't know what can be done better in those situations, and things happen so quickly. But that's certainly a good point.
Stats about law enforcement training. In most states, law enforcement officers are the least trained professionals in our society. It is pretty standard that you have to spend twice as many hours training to become a barber than you do to become a police officer. Like, just the amount of training that they get for the job that they're given is so not adequate.
Yeah, and that's not good. And you would also, I think you would concede that, and this is what happens, and obviously I'm speaking to you from ground zero, from where a lot of this originated with Mike Brown years ago, but I don't know what the percentage would be, David, but most of the time these are young officers that get into these situations, young, inexperienced officers.
Yep, and they're not prepared for the job, and they're, again, it's a tough situation, things are moving lightning fast, and it's all life or death, and they've got to make the best decision they can with the equipment and training they're found in. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't see this and go, let's get them better training as soon as possible, instead of arguing over whether or not we need to defund them completely or defend them no matter what. Let's try to train them to be better so we get better outcomes as soon as possible.
What else would you point to outside of the police, you know, training? What else would you point to then?
As far as other policies that we could implement that would... I think one of the biggest policies we should talk about more is the repercussions of the war on drugs. where a lot of these interactions that we see between police officers and members of the Black community is an attempt to enforce laws that are clearly, totally unenforceable. And instead of treating drug addiction like a mental health crisis like we should, we treat it like a criminal crisis. And that puts them at odds.
I could not agree more with that point. I think it's look, I've talked about this. It's the biggest failure that this country's ever had, the war on drugs, big waste of time and resources. And in some of it continues. And it's baffling to me because I think a lot of us, look, you're aware. I'm aware. I think a lot of people on the right are aware, especially those of us who are more libertarian. But not enough seems to change. And I don't know how to fix that because there's ample evidence to prove that we need to handle that in a different direction.
Yeah, and I think that that is one of the things that most people from the left and the right could get behind.
Yeah, I agree.
Instead, we have the extreme parts where it's like for the last few years, we've had this defund the police argument. Like, why are we focusing on a ridiculous policy that helps no one when we could be having discussions about ending the war on drugs, which helps the situation, and that's one of the places where focus needs to be.
I agree with you. David Ben Moshe, thanks for joining me from Israel. I appreciate the column and the perspective, and if you finish that book, get back with us. Would love to have you back sometime. Okay, David?
Definitely. Thanks for talking to me.
522 97.1 FM Talk, Mark Reardon on a Monday evening. Terry Jones from Issues and Insights coming up about climate change and how all those modeling, the alarmist modeling, I guess it will say, from years past have not come true. One political story I wanted to get to just as a follow-up to something that happened last week. This was a story in our local paper today. I mentioned this, I think, on the roundtable as well on Friday, that Eric Reitens, the former governor, did an interview last week. He's running for the United States Senate, and he kind of twisted this whole thing around with the Second Amendment Preservation Act, which was something that was passed by Missouri lawmakers, signed into effect by the governor. Sue, you remember 60 Minutes of this story on a couple of weeks ago, right? And the twist from 60 Minutes or the spin was, look, this is a bad thing, and law enforcement is complaining about it, which in some cases is true. I mean, they featured some people, but not everyone is against it. But Greitens did something very interesting, especially as purportedly a Second Amendment guy. He tried to turn it around. And he said, look, what Republicans did, and he's doing this under the guise of they're the Republican establishment, they don't do things. He said, look, they've defunded the police, essentially. That's what they've done. Well, that didn't work out so well for him, and now he's turned around and he said this: I 100% support the Second Amendment Preservation Act. Do nothing, establishment rhinos and lobbyists will never truly stand up for the Second Amendment to protect your gun rights. Don't be fooled. I think he's saying two different things on that. But some of this was spurred on. I'm going to play you a little audio here from a guy by the name of Aaron Doerr. Aaron Doerr is Second Amendment guy. He's with a group called the Missouri Firearms Coalition. And I can't play it all. It's 17 minutes. He just rips on Greitens for like 17 minutes.
And everything that you do and all the apologies that you make, I want to remind you, and I've said it before now in this video, I want to say it again. Watch the tone in your voice. Watch the arrogance and the condescension in your mannerisms. Watch the way you carry yourself as you apologize, because you have come across as the most arrogant, condescending ass that we have seen, certainly in this cycle and perhaps in all of the cycles in recent memory here in Missouri.
Ouch! Eric Greitens, of course, running for the Senate. Vicky Hartzler, who's also running from the Senate. She's a United States Congresswoman from the other side of the state. She's going to join me tomorrow on 97.1 FM Talk.
Man, you want in the end. Only then can I begin to live again. An empty shell.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
I used to be the shadow of all my life was hanging over me. Broken man that I don't know won't even stand.
We have an audio cut of the day sponsored by the Sound Room. Before the afternoon is up, I mentioned Missouri Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, who's running for the United States Senate, is going to join us tomorrow night. My buddy Scott Jennings from down in Louisville, who is occasionally one of the few people that can keep people sane on CNN, will join us in the 5 o'clock hour tomorrow night here on 97.1 FM Talk. Climate change to me has always been, you know, now that we're in the pandemic, a little bit like the science of the pandemic. A lot of things were shot out there at the beginning and they've been proven to be false. Same thing happens with climate change. But the difference is, well, maybe there is no difference. You're not allowed, mainly in the LA Times and the mainstream media, to speak in any way, shape, or form against the narrative of scaring the hell out of people and lying to them about the planet and the fate of the planet. Terry Jones is an editor at Issue and Insights, wrote about this in an editorial that kind of breaks down some of these myths even further. Hi, Terry. How are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk here in St. Louis.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be there, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
One of the things that you guys wrote is that I think I sense that you have some confidence that, you know, this stuff is going to kind of collapse on itself and we're going to realize the truth. I don't hold that out because I keep hearing the nonsense from the Biden administration, from the New York Times. I mean, the LA Times has made it clear they won't even allow an opposite or anything that would challenge the conventional wisdom, whatever that is, on climate change right now. So how do you actually poke through with facts like you guys are trying to do?
Well, it's very difficult because you just have to be patient and you have to come out, you know, bit by bit and, you know, take a swing at the pinata every time, every chance you get. But, you know, every time you point out these problematic issues with global warming and with the whole theory underlying it, people get mad at you. They accuse you of being shills for the oil industry,
right.
Anti-science, all these things. But in fact, I believe we are far more respectful of actual science than they are. They've basically politicized science and turned it into something that it's not supposed to be, which is a pre-cooked meal that comes out ready, and they tell you what it is, and you just believe it.
Well, and you pointed out in the recent editorial that there was some research that came out from the University of Cambridge that talks about warming arriving far earlier than that. When was that first SUB roaming the planet? 1919 or something like that? Is that when all this began?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Well, it's pretty incredible because the overarching argument has always been that a burst of CO2 emissions due to industrialization, in particular after World War II when the global economy boomed, were responsible for the warming of the Arctic regions, and soon we would have no Arctic ice and the world would be all melted and Manhattan would disappear and Florida would shrivel to a little finger. Well,
by the way, I'm okay with California, you know, suffering that fate. I think that might be good for the country overall.
it might actually help things out here, but so it's that has been the overarching message that we've been fed, but this completely contradicts that, and so do other recent studies, including one that showed that CO2 emissions, far from actually increasing, have been flat or slightly declining over the last decade. And it's largely because of mistakes made in the statistical calculations of CO2 output. So not only are we not, you know, warming as people said we were, we are also not spewing as much CO2 into the atmosphere as people think we are. And so if those are the linchpins of this catastrophe and this crisis, then, you know, hey, I got a message for you. Catastrophe is over. You know, let's stop worrying about this stuff. And if there is a problem with any kind of heating or what or rising temperatures or whatever, we can deal with it in a rational and economic.
Oh, no, we can't do that.
That would be too dangerous, wouldn't it?
You know, it's interesting, though. I made the pandemic comparison. You think about just the science, if you will, or the attitudes on masking, because one of the things that has annoyed me from the beginning with COVID, and let me just say this. If masks do work, and I think I've seen some research to show that you can reduce the spread of COVID if you have the proper mask on, not what we wear with the cloth mask. So if you have an N95 and you're wearing it all the time, I will probably grant you that you can reduce the spread of COVID. But that's not what people are doing. They're all wearing cloth masks. They're not washing them. They're touching, you know, so that's why I kind of lose the faith in what the scientists say there. But the comparison here would be, look, people grabbed and they latched on to wear a mask, wear a mask, wear a mask. That was their religion. It was virtue signaling on steroids. And that's kind of what's happened with climate change because of Al Gore and the media. They've scared people into thinking, man, we got to do the right thing. We have to ban straws, right? That's going to save the planet. When we have paper straws, which are about the most damn annoying thing I've ever used, that's going to help us, right, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. That'll solve everything, right? Yeah, it's no. The argument takes precedent over, you know, logic or actual science or results. And in the global warming issue, it's particularly annoying because what has happened is they've created all of these models, and none of the models, by the way, happen to work. When you go back and you
yeah,
run
a little secret, right?
Yeah, it's they all predict, you know, horrible things happening in the future. You know, we're all going to burn, we're all going to fry. It's going to be up 4 or 5 degrees, and you know, we'll live in deserts everywhere, and it never happens. You know, starting in 1850. You know, these models, the average model has predicted something like 1.5 degrees centigrade increase in temperature. Well, it didn't happen. It has happened in reality, at least as far as we know from the data we have, is the temperature increased by a degree. So these models are off by a factor of a third. That's not science. That's guesswork. That's throwing a dart, dart at a dartboard. And then the models are very, you know, are very poorly constructed because what they do is they start out with a hypothesis. And I won't go too much into this, but they start off with a hypothesis and then tweak the numbers until they get the answer they want. It's not science at all. It's basically a numbers game. And so we're being told that dire things are going to happen based on very poor numbers and poor modeling, and it's just not true. And the sooner that people realize that, the better off they'll be, and they can, you know, ignore this stuff because it's really getting in the way of things right now.
Well,
the way,
and we, you know, but the other thing that's frustrating, and I bring this up all the time, if you really want to talk about solutions, we have some solutions. There is a nuclear power plant here in Fulton, Missouri, for example. We could have more nuclear power plants. They would provide less CO2 emissions. We would have energy. These are solutions. We don't talk about solutions, though, do we?
No. The solutions aren't – they don't really want solutions. I mean, because the dirty little secret about the whole climate change movement is that it's really about political power and money and has nothing whatsoever to do with the temperature of the Earth. I mean, all of these, all of the major money for this comes from big governments, and big governments always love to have a catastrophe or a crisis to address because it makes them important. And when they become important, guess what? They get more money. And when they get more money, they get more power. And that's what the whole thing is about. And climate change is a classic example of that. It's the science is half-baked, pardon the pun, and frankly, not convincing on any level. It's really a problem when, you know, we have governments around the world all, you know, echoing the same message, And it's ignoring the science rather than paying attention to it, the real science, which says this is not a cataclysmic issue that we have to address right now.
Well, Greta Thunberg told me almost four years ago now, that we had 7 years. So we only got three more years left. So I'm a little concerned because time is going by quickly.
Well, they keep moving it back.
Really?
On us.
Go figure, Terry. Yeah. It's just, you know, I actually feel badly for that kid because I think her parents have abused her. I think it's child abuse what's happened to her.
Yeah. Well, Prince Charles warned us, too, years ago that we had half a dozen years or something like that to address this. Well, the half a dozen years is up, so will he please shut up about this?
He will not, though. You know that. That's going to be, and the Democrats won't shut up about it either. Terry Jones, Issues and Insights, writing about the climate models. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on 97.1 FM Talk, Terry.
Thanks, Mark.
It's ridiculous. Well, we were talking here, you know, I was looking up some of the predictions are kind of fun to look at from years past, and there was one, now I don't think I can find it, from a Washington University biologist in 1970, because remember, a lot of this stuff took off in 1970 with the doom and gloom and how if we don't make changes, the planet's going to shrivel up. And we've survived, and I think we will survive. We'll only survive, though, if we plan on adapting, not just keep talking about climate change like John Kerry and Greta Thunberg. We need solutions. There are solutions, and we can adapt. Yeah, 541, audio cut of the day, still to come here, sponsored by The Sound Room on 97.1 FM Talk. All right, a little Trombone Shorty, Hurricane Season. Love that song. Thank you, Dave Klein. Bumper music's been excellent tonight. I have several potential cuts of the day. I have narrowed it down. We have chosen one, but I have to squeeze in a little bit more audio here this afternoon. You know, so we'll do the official audio cut of the day here in a second. You know, Chris Cuomo was fired over the weekend. Some people might have missed that. It came over Saturday night. I didn't hear it Saturday. I woke up Sunday morning to that news. But this just makes me laugh. There's several things here that make me laugh. But, you know, do you know Stelter's show, Dave? What's it called? He fancies himself a bit of a media critic, doesn't he?
You're right.
So this is how he opened his show on CNN yesterday.
You know the biggest media story this weekend. It's the firing of Chris Cuomo from this network, CNN. Now, I've been working the phones ever since this was announced.
All right, he's been working the phones at the place that he works. I love that. Okay, Brian, tell us what you found out, buddy. Can't wait.
Yesterday evening, frankly, I've been on the phone until the last 5 minutes here getting information about what happened. And where CNN goes from here.
I'm sorry. Do I even need to say anything? This is like a comedy routine.
So I'd like to start, now that you know the news about Cuomo's firing, with a timeline of how it came to this point. Why was Chris Cuomo fired now, after CNN management supported him all year long? That's the key question I've been pursuing as a media reporter for the past, you know, 18 hours or so.
Oh, okay. Well, what did you find
out?
That's
an in-depth
investigation. Brian, what did you find? He's a media reporter, Sue. This is his job.
You know, the irony of this is his show is called Reliable Sources.
Well, right. This is what he thinks he does, right?
This is about a confluence of factors, about a series of headaches that seemed like they were never going to end. This seems like a case of death by a thousand cuts, and my reporting sense backs that assessment up. This was about not any single headache, but many headaches that continued to pile up.
Thank God Brian Stelter weighed in and told me exactly what happened with Chris Cuomo and what led to his firing. Because
that's just,
I don't know. Yeah, that was it. That was all he had. Right. I can't. They think they're so important over there.
He's still working
ratings,
the phone, Sue.
Their ratings are so bad. Yeah, he's been on the phone since
for
Saturday
hours.
Night
yeah.
with
yeah.
people. Now, I played this earlier. It deserves a second spin because of, I don't even know if this stuff is outrageous anymore, simply because it happens so often, and it happens more than this. It's just that she was caught. So there was a group that sent out Great Lakes Gun Rights, sent out something in the aftermath of that horrible Oxford shooting. I don't even know what the news release said. It really doesn't matter. There's this woman who does work for the New York Times, Erin Markey, who works for a group called Wirecutter. It's wirecutter.com. They sell things on there. So she's not technically what she says she is, but she calls this group after they sent out a news release.
Hi, I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I'm just calling to wonder, I have two questions. How do you sleep at night? And aren't you just, like, a little bit worried that there might be a hell, and when you meet God, he will send you there? That's just my only question. Third question, the only people politicizing this seems to be you, because you're the only people I got a f***ing press release from. Again, I am from from the New York Times, and I'm letting everyone in the New York Times know what kind of f***ing assholes you are. Congrats on being a laughingstock. You f***ing ghouls. I hope that there is a God in heaven so he judges you when you die.
Well, that was a nice message.
Jeez.
And she won't even be fired. That's the thing. Now, they say that they're looking into it at this point. You think she'll be fired? No. No, she's my guess is she is a, what would you say about it? Well, she is an editor, so maybe she's 30 years old. She's African-American. She's triggered all the time. And, you know, somehow this has to be about race, too, is what my guess is. I like Dan Campbell. He's the head coach of the Detroit Lions. They're one of the worst teams in all of football and have been pretty much since they were founded, right? But Campbell's a guy who's got a lot of personality. He's up against it. They had not won a game until yesterday, okay? And we do parlays, I told you, over the weekend. I just spent 10, 20 bucks, sent my bets out, and Becky wanted to put the Vikings in there. They played the Lions. And I said, every once in a while I get around, I'm like, you know, the Lions, they're going to win a game this year. This is what happens.
They're
right?
Due.
And they won the game. But this is what Dan Campbell did in the aftermath of that game. I loved it.
The first thing I'm going to start with, this game ball goes to the whole Oxford community. All those were affected. And that being said, man, I want us to not forget these names, Madison Baldwin, Hannah St. Juliana, Justin Schilling, Tate Mir, Phoebe Arthur, John Ashutu, Riley France, Elijah Mueller, Kylie Osigi, Aiden Watson, and Molly Darnell, who's a teacher. Those names, for all those, you know, will never be forgotten, and they're in our hearts and our prayers and all the families, and not to mention all those that were affected by all of this.
I don't want to talk about that kid. I don't want to talk about his idiot parents moving forward. What he did is he recognized the families that this month of December will experience horror every day because of the holidays. Thinking about you, Dave, you and I, we have little kids right now. It is horrifying.
Unimaginable.
But I appreciate what Coach Campbell did there. All right, so now we have this.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
And I don't think I left myself enough time, but we'll see here. This is Dana Milbank from The Washington Post. Shill that he is. I'll just play it. Listen to what he says here.
It started out for Biden, fairly favorable coverage the first few months of the year. The last 4 months, however, Biden has been at where Donald Trump was or lower than where Donald Trump is in terms of media sentiment. I mean, it's not bias. It's the actual words we're using. So we are as negative as a collective media on Joe Biden, if not more so than we were to Donald Trump at a time when he was trying to overthrow democracy. And I think that's a tremendous indictment of our whole industry.
You've got to be here. You've got to be kidding me. Like, he tried to say that with a straight face, Dana Milbank. That's your audio cut of the day. It's sponsored by The Sound Room. You can find the Sony triple digit 100-inch TV right next to Amini's in the Chesterfield Valley. We'll talk tomorrow night.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.